away we go. Do I have a motion to approve the 7 sets of minutes before you? Representative Tice moves on approval of 7 sets of minutes for February 9th, 15th, 16th, 23rd, 24th, 29th, and March 2nd, which was the day after my birthday, and the 23rd was my son's birthday. Any additions, corrections, or changes, members? All right, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. I want to thank each and every one of the committee members and the public for being here today. Everyone in this room knows that childcare is an important profession and essential for our state's children. When childcare thrives, our state thrives, and it is really the building block of our economy. Last month, our new committee came together to truly listen to the voices of parents, providers, and communities to learn about the issues facing childcare across the state. We engaged with about 200 people in 7 communities, and we will continue the conversation in the metro in the near future. Our committee took into account the voices of each and every person who talked to us on tour or contacted us outside of the tour. We worked to come up with short-term and forward-looking solutions in response to the great dialogue we had. We recognize, though, that with such a short time period from our last tour to today, we cannot change the entire system, but it's a start. And we are making a commitment to our state that we're in it for the long haul. Our bill works to accomplish 3 goals based on what we heard on this tour. Number 1, we want to stop the shortage. We want to help prevent the exodus of providers so parents can find childcare they desperately need. We do this by advocating for providers, by looking into ways to streamline administrative and paperwork overload that currently burdens these small business owners. And we also aim to eliminate inconsistencies on licensing enforcement. Number 2, encourage childcare business development. Our goal is to encourage community collaboration to develop unique community solution plans to meet local childcare needs. We also want to minimize a seemingly overwhelming startup process by creating a simple how-to guide on starting a childcare business in multiple innovative capacities. And number 3, to develop long-term solutions relating to cost and access. Based on what we've heard across the state, the issue of cost and access is complex and needs careful vetting and unpacking while ensuring our nation-leading quality and safety standards. Our legislation creates a task force to continue the discussion with all voices at the table. To address the scope and intricacies of that issue and develop long-term solutions. With that, I'd like to close with a lesson from Sesame Street that I've always told my kids in childcare. Cooperation makes it happen. And this legislation is a result of our cooperation. Now I'd like each of our committee members to introduce themselves and talk a bit about what they've learned on the tour. Who's going first? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Tama Tice. I live in District 14A, which is St. Cloud Way Park, St. Augusta. And I think the biggest eye-opening that we heard in our area was the fact that there's quite a bit of work that needs to be done in the county level as far as making sure that everybody's on the same page. I think that what we saw was a lot of conflicting interpretations and probably not everybody talking to each other very well and really getting to know the situation. So it was really interesting to know that, you know, we really did have a lot of work to do in our area as far as communication goes and making sure that we're doing really good things on both sides to make sure that people know what's expected, to know when things are not correct and not go through the long way of figuring that out. So I truly just really learned a lot about the fact that we really aren't communicating very well with each other, and by that I mean our licensors and our daycare folks. I think interpretation is probably the hardest thing that ever happens, but it really seemed like there were really some deep issues with that, so I'm really excited to hopefully maybe clear that out a little bit so that everybody's on the same page. Thanks.
Representative Jeff Backer, really summarize from all the listening sessions that I was at is providers want to provide care for our children, but they're really held back with all the regulations. They're frustrated. We have a need in the market. We have the children who need that need, but we're not seeing an increase in providers because of regulations.
Representative Ron Creature from Little Falls. I think the biggest takeaway I had from the meetings was the enormous amount of risk that we're trying to manage. The risk of taking care of other children, other people's children, and what that risk inherently carries, as well as the risk down in the legislature of not moving too far ahead in one direction, but yet at the same time not allowing for a situation where the awful event of a child death could occur. And so the difficult job that we have is how we're going to manage that risk with the right amount of regulation, and still knowing that we have a huge shortage. We have a huge shortage of providers that have the best of intentions, of people that want to do the right thing, but I don't think anybody on this committee would ever want to pass a change in statute or pass a new set of legislation that they would find out later could have been prevented. And so that makes our job very, very difficult. And I think that Chair Franson has assembled a good committee here, and we'll have some of those discussions. But managing the right amount of risk so that we can all sleep at night will be a big part of this job. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Flanagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm State Representative Peggy Flanagan. So I think we heard from a lot of folks, a lot of providers across the state, and there's really a need for a streamlining of both paperwork and policy as it relates to the Child Care Assistance Program. Consistency of licensors across the state. We clearly heard that folks in Worthington or Waite Park were having different experiences, and we want to make sure that there's consistency across the board. Clearly, there's a gap in providers who can provide at home or who can provide infant care. We heard that consistently from a whole host of reasons. I think while not part of this bill specifically, we need to look at providing incentives for providers in taking on infants across the state. And in particular, we've seen that this is an issue in rural Minnesota, in greater Minnesota. I've enjoyed the conversations that we've had. I think people think that we're listening, and that's important, and look forward to additional conversations here in the Metro and with folks throughout our communities. Thank you.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard an awful lot about county inspectors' lack of understanding of the DHS guidelines and rules. some apparently understood them very well, and the providers were really happy. Others were creating a lot of problems, and when checking with DHS, there was misinterpretation widely happening. There was a huge lack of infant care, both because of regs and lack of reimbursement money. There were some paperwork complaints, especially on Parent Aware. And then there were some, I remember especially at one, that there was questions or complaints about that they needed more money because of all the hard work, and it was hard for them to stay in the field even though they loved it. So those were the main things that I remember, and I'm looking forward to more hearings in the metro area and hear, for one thing, in a community of color, how things are working, because we really didn't have anything like that. So I'm looking forward to the variations that might be happening here.
Thank you. And so if we could just have House Research do a walkthrough of the bill. Danielle?
Madam Chair and members, House File 3433 includes various provisions related to child care licensing, advocacy, and business development. Section 1 of the bill directs the commissioner to study the cost for development of a website for use by child care providers and prospective providers that would provide a single point of access for various pieces of information, including the statutes and rules relevant to child care, a guide for how to start a child care business, and for completing and submitting various electronic applications and other forms. Section 2 requires a county licensor who has conducted a licensing inspection to provide the licensee with a written notification of potential licensing violations that were noted during the visit. The notification must be provided prior to the licensor's departure from the home. Section 3 provides for training for county licensing staff on family child care and group family child care requirements. It establishes an 8-hour pre-service training requirement for county licensors, and it requires the commissioner to increase training and oversight of county licensors. Section 4 requires the Commissioner of Human Services to create a full-time position to act as a liaison and advocate for child care providers. Section 5 establishes a legislative task force on child care and provides for the membership and duties of that task force and requires the task force to issue a report to the legislature and the governor by December 31st of 2016. Section 6 relates to child care business development and appropriates an unspecified amount of money in fiscal year 2017 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for grants to local communities so that communities can increase the number of child care providers. And Section 7 appropriates an unspecified amount of money in fiscal year 2017 to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to produce a manual to instruct prospective child care providers on how to start a business.
Thank you, Jen. Now I'd like to open the, actually I should say, is there anybody, any members that wish to have any discussion on the bill before I move to testimony? All right, seeing none, I'm going to open up the meeting to public testimony. If you'd like to get on the list, please sign up on the sheet in the back of the room there. And members, if you'll note, there's some written testimony included in your packet already as well. And so first up, we have Ms. Julie Seidel. If you just state your name for the record and...
Julie Seidel. I'm a licensed family child care provider.
Do you want to take the mic? Yep. Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
My name is Julie Seidel, and I am actually the membership director for the Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals. I'm also a licensed child care provider in Anoka County, and I have been for 14 years. MACCP's mission is to strengthen the family child care profession by advocating for policy improvements, offering additional support and services to providers, and by promoting family child care as an exceptional option for quality care and early childhood education. MACCP supports many aspects of House File 3433. Based on the feedback from our membership, we appreciate this committee soliciting of input from families and providers around the state and your concern regarding the child care shortage in Minnesota. As the committee identified, a number of issues have contributed to a child care shortage. As a licensed family child care provider myself, I can personally testify to the increased burden license holders have each passing year with more regulations or changing interpretations of existing regulations. Some of these changes make sense. We do want to keep children safe. Others, however, do not. One of the common concerns we hear from providers is a lack of consistency among county licensors and misinformation about providers' rights. The mandatory training for and release of information to county licensors included in this bill and funded in 2013 would alleviate many providers' frustrations and would likely help licensors. The ever-increasing amounts of paperwork providers must compile and maintain each year has also become burdensome. Therefore, we support any efforts to streamline processes either online or in paper form and combine resources into a few locations as possible. We've heard from a number of family child care providers who have been surprised to receive correction orders days or weeks after they thought what was a perfect licensing inspection. Therefore, we support the proposed requirements for county licensors to notify providers in writing and before leaving their home about any potential licensing violations. This will encourage a more open dialogue between licensors and providers and will allow a provider to collect timely documentation related to any violation. Family child care providers often do not know whom to contact at DHS or feel uncomfortable doing so when they have questions, concerns, or suggestions. Many have shared experiences about long waits for appeals of correction orders or responses to questions. When providers disagree with or have questions about the way their county licensor is interpreting a rule, they don't have a go-to number for information. A full-time liaison would solve many of those issues. MACCP supports the formation of a task force to further consider the issues that families and family child care providers face. We look forward to working with the task force, DHS, and licensed family child care providers to find ways to alleviate the concerns of the remaining 9,000 licensed family child care providers and families who are searching for care. These proposed changes could provide some much-needed relief for those who are still in the business and therefore to the children and families they serve or who are looking for care. We encourage you to support these modest changes, which will provide some sensible relief to existing providers and hopefully encourage more individuals to choose this rewarding profession, giving families the option for quality care that they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Seidel, for your testimony. Members, is there anybody that wants to ask Ms. Seidel any questions? No? Okay, thank you. Next up, we have Ms. Cindy Cunningham. And Cindy, you know the drill.
I do. I never get the testimony quite right. Cindy Cunningham, child care provider in Ramsey County for 18 years. Madam Chair and committee members, I always write a whole book, and then it's like, what do I really say? Mainly what you have done and what you have said and what you have put forth is exactly what child care providers need. I admire your work across the state, and I will tell you that it is talked about and it is known, and providers do feel supported and listened to, and that at least there's the potential for some going through of the system that will make sense for us. All aspects included in this hearing notice are basically to ensure that providers know and understand what is expected of them, and it builds relationships between DHS, county licensing, and the providers, which is a partnership that needs to be increased. It ensures the safety and security of children. I would suggest that by increasing and improving communication and understanding with providers, that the safety and security of children is increased, because then they more likely know what their job is and how to do it and where to go when there is issues. Nothing in this hearing undermines or diminishes the expectation that the safety and security of children is paramount. It actually gives this roadmap. The actions would lead to clearer communication from DHS to providers rather than there being 87 counties to communicate with. Currently, DHS communicates with the licensing units, who they then expect to communicate with us as providers. It often does not happen. This positive support rule and poisonous plant information is two recent pieces that have come through that I have known about, but that we are, as providers, are not getting informed. The DHS sends out the information. The counties are not accurately or consistently giving it to us as providers, so therefore we don't know what is expected of us. It would put in place communication of all aspects of our business, the statute, the licensing, training, parent aware, CCAP, and many other pieces of information. Currently, providers learn word of mouth, scattered emails from multiple agencies, and it's very disjointed. Providers would know what to expect, how to navigate the system, who to contact, and when, and therefore be better equipped to focus on our jobs, providing care and safety for children, rather than waiting for something to happen. It would create a more positive system and relationships, which would then lend itself to keep providers and attract others into the field. During 2015, I spent much of my time working with the Human Services Department in Ramsey County and DHS to address this issue in the licensing unit in Ramsey County. It became clear that the licensing department was not implementing statute accurately, and they were adding on expectations and negative consequences which providers were not aware of and they were yet needed to comply with. It took many hours of time convincing the county management that the licensing unit was not implementing rules accurately. Once this was accomplished by myself and many other providers in the county, the management began working more directly with DHS and were trained more at higher or a deeper depth by DHS. Currently, there is a much more positive environment in Ramsey County as licensors are implementing statute appropriately and providers more accurately know what is expected. What is still missing is a level of communication between the providers and DHS. DHS continues to be the support for licensors and has stated that they do not have the staff to support providers. I understand this to a degree. However, unless the licensors are looking directly to DHS for training and direction, they are acting out on their own. Providers deserve to have a resource to understand the process of becoming licensed and maintaining that license. Currently, the websites have links, and most counties do have resources, but again, it is very disjointed. Some counties have many resources and direction, and many counties do not have much of anything. Child care licensing in Minnesota is complex and has increased in scope of oversight in the past few years. This was my visual as a teacher. This is currently the book that we have to follow. Okay. When I started, and this was, I think, in 2009, this was the book that started. The problem that's missing between the two books is the communication with us as providers to know what's expected of us and how to do it. That's the significant piece. I was privileged to be able to help write some of the legislation that was in here and partake in that, so I understand it. But if you're not sitting here and processing it through it and knowing it, it is very difficult to follow. As far as the specifics, Legislative Task Force, I see this as a first step to ensure the stability of child care in Minnesota, to find the root causes, which I think many of you have already heard, which is licensing, consistency, communication. It would assist in providers staying in the field, being able to solve what our business problems are, and be able to attract. The startup manual is, to me, is critical, along with the setup manual, the last one, is if we don't know what we're supposed to do, how are we supposed to do it? Most providers start feeling like we're just waiting to be blindsided for somebody to come forth with us. Regarding the training, I'm expected to know what to do. I don't know why our licensors aren't also trained in how to do it. In 2013, I met a licensor who had, was very uncomfortable, very frustrated because she'd been on the job for 6 months and no one had yet explained to her what she was supposed to do, how she was supposed to do it, what the licensing standards were, or anything. I hope that some of that's improved in her county, but I don't think it was a unique situation. As far as the liaison and advocate position, this was actually a suggestion I also gave to DHS late last summer, fall. They said they would think about it. I think it is a position that if it was clear and accurate resources on a web page combined with a person to call and talk to would be helpful. Many providers call myself or providers are talking to each other. That's not our best way to know for facts, but currently it's the safest way. No one wants to go to someone who's going to turn around and give them a correction order or a negative action and risk asking a question that they might be held to accountability on rather than changing. I believe this type of position should be separate from the DHS management. I have no idea how that would be set up, but in St. Paul for schools, there's a liaison, but that person does not report to the superintendent. That person more likely reports to the school board. I'm afraid that if a liaison advocate was perceived as being reporting to the commissioner or to the DHS licensing unit, that providers, it would not work because providers would be less likely, again, to go to that to that person. As far as the notification of for the correction orders, that was a piece that was implemented in Ramsey County in 2015. Worked very effectively. The licensors would talk to us. Some were giving it in writing, some were at least verbally stating this is what we're going to go back and discuss and check in with. They checked within the unit. They also called DHS. It got clarification on rules. And then the licensor actually came back out to our homes, and then we were issued those correction orders. One of my own caveats is I was given correction orders in the midst of my pushback, and it ended up that the Ramsey County was basically wrong on all but one, and it took 10 months for that to be resolved, which is kind of one of my side questions for long-term or short-term would be timing on due process for providers, 10 months. The legal department told me that was because their priority was on background checks, which is good, but my correction orders I have to comply with until it's turned over. So there's my side of please continue on these roads. So the notification, because we were getting notifications, there were providers like a year and a half. Someone was going through the file and finding correction orders. That has cleaned up with this three-day turnaround in Ramsey County, and again, it has built a much more positive, stronger expectation and relationship between the licensing unit. So that is one I can say that I would attest to is already being implemented and does work well. The startup manual as something, it's a complex process. Providers in Ramsey County, the last I know of people who have been trying to get licensed, it's taking upwards to a year to 2 years to actually get it, to get an actual license. In the meantime, they're not able to provide for care. And in Ramsey County, the latest in talking to parents is they're calling a minimum of 80 providers and still not being able to find, in particular, an infant care. So anything that could be done to increase that would be, or open those up, would be well worthwhile. As a side, one of my counterparts in Ramsey County, Brenda Ruza, and I were talking, and she is the on the board of our Ramsey County Association. She sent me an email I'd like to briefly just state. She's worked with the federal block grant implementation evaluation and with the bleach legislation that was in 13, emergency preparedness manual, and is the neighborhood coordinator for her area. And just in summary, her greatest concern in her statement that she said to me today is, again, we're concerned that with implementation specifically of the federal block grant, that once again it's going to be a wave of expectation on providers without explanation and without communication, and once again providers are going to say, it's too much, we can't dig through it, there's not a good roadmap again. So if in specifically right away, if the federal block grant implementation could start this route, that would be a perfect perfect step in for this kind of information.
Thank you, Cindy. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Cunningham? All right, seeing none, thank you for your time. Next up, we have Lisa Koonin. Lisa, welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just found out about this meeting this afternoon, so I apologize that I may not be as prepared as I would like to be, but I have a lot that I would like to share. My name is Lisa Koonin. I have 10 years' experience in the corporate sector and have a business management degree. I've been a licensed provider in Mendota Heights, Dakota County, for 18 and a half years. I was a Dakota County Provider of the Year recipient in 2003. I was in the first graduating class of Supervision U, a program Dakota County started in 2008. I was in the first graduating class of the Sleep On It campaign implemented in 2013. Since licensed in January of 1998, I've never had a year with less than 20 recorded hours of training. I currently care for 10 children ages 5 and under. I work alone. However, I have kept my C3 group license status as Dakota County has eliminated the variance process. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, a variance would be considered for a short-term need. For example, in February of this year, I enrolled a 13-month-old sibling of a previous family, which caused me to have 3 children under the age of 2 for 15 days, until one of those children turned age 2. I would not be in my license numbers if I enrolled that child. I did not have a variance opportunity, so I kept my C3 license and was able to have my husband work with me for those 15 days legally, and I could enroll that child. Licensing received a complaint that I was over my numbers and came to investigate. They discovered that I was not over my legal numbers, but I was temporarily for 15 days over my ages. As my husband was found to be at home working with me and had all required training to be an assistant caregiver, I was found compliant. But if I had not had the C3 license, then I would never have had that opportunity to enroll that child when I did. This part's very difficult for me. September 19, 2013, forever changed the way I feel about being a child care professional. I'm very respected in Dakota County circles and the members of family child care for Dakota County. I'm jumping around here, but I was needing some help. Life was pretty chaotic, and so I sought to get a helper, and I hired a person that was in the business to be a backup provider. Had a license number, a company name, everything to state that she was a licensed backup provider. I hired her for 3 days, a total of 15 hours, and I never left her unsupervised with my kids because I felt she was still in training. I was honest with her as to why I hired her, that I had just enrolled a new family and didn't have a proper sleep space for him, and I had some other changes, rearranging where I had 3 infants. I wanted to rearrange things so I would have better utilization space between cribs, etc. And I was honest that the reason I was hiring her is because I had a child that I'd had for 1 week sleeping in a crib in my unlicensed living room, a formally licensed space, which is viewable by my dining room and my kitchen and has 4 separate exits. He was 5 months old, and he was sleeping in an unlicensed space in a crib. My first licensor, I've had 7 in my 18 and a half years. My first licensor, I had a child sleeping in an unlicensed space. Totally okay. As long as they could not stand up, it's okay to have a child that can't stand up in an unlicensed space, as long as the egress and everything else is there. I had personal experience that a licensor had said that was okay. 17 years or 15 years later, I'm getting a violation for the same account. Many of the rules have changed since 1997, but the interpretation of those rules have changed. For example, I just told you that example. The other example would be, we used to be able to, at least in Dakota County, use a baby monitor to have a child sleeping in your house and had the baby monitor while you had your children playing in the backyard. That was in the 1990s, early 2000s. The regulation has not changed. The regulation still states that you should, best practices to use a baby monitor. My neighbor can have an infant sleeping on the 3rd floor of her house while she is running daycare in the basement, yet I cannot have a baby monitor usage in my backyard, which is 11 feet from my infant sleeping in a crib that I can see through my patio door. Interpretation of the law. And I got written up for that one as well. When the licensors came out on September 19th, I've never felt so intimidated or so humiliated in my entire life. And I'm a very confident woman. I trusted the system until that day. The supervision rule that a provider needs to be within sight and or hearing in order to intervene is a no-win situation for a provider. If a provider goes to the bathroom, even if she leaves the door open, and a child falls and gets hurt, the provider will be found negligent as they were unable to intervene. It's not within sight and or hearing. The key word is in order to intervene. I've been very proud of a play space that my husband and I provide for my daycare children. We have a carpeted, roof-covered front porch with a railing all the way across and a locking gate on it, all regulation height. On September 19th, as licensing drove by with a complaint in their mind, they observed four children, preschoolers, picking up toys on my gated front porch. The screen door was open, and I was inside the screen door with the infants, helping them remove their shoes. By the time licensing that parked three houses down, even though there was parking right in front of my house, by the time they got to my house, all those children were in, getting ready for bed. I was violated for, written up for having children unsupervised on my gated front porch. The licensor wrote that up, and it is on permanent record that I had unsupervised children in my front yard. I'm sorry, but I feel that there's a huge difference of perception when somebody reads my public record that will be there forever, that I left four unsupervised children in my front yard when they were safe on a carpeted play space in a gated front porch. That same day, I was given a $200 fine for not having a background check on said employee who was in the business to do license backup. It is written on my permanent file for everyone to see that I neglected to get a background check on an employee. On file, and I'd be happy to give it to anybody who wants to see it, I had a background check from the Department of, I'm sorry, I don't have it, but it was issued in Ramsey County. And I had that on file. I wasn't neglecting to get a background check. Did I make a mistake that I didn't issue one to Dakota County? Yes. I believe that was an honest, simple mistake of a very fine line. I had a background check. I had all the training that was required, and I'd never left her alone with my children yet. Yet I got a $200 fine that I neglected to get a background check that I had on file. My list goes on and on. That visit was horrific. I had children sleeping in a laundry room that has four exits, and in my egress window I had a folded blanket and a roll of and a package of toilet paper from Sam's Club, blocking my egress window. There's three other doors. That was the only one going to the outside. Was there stuff in front of the window? Yes. My husband's been a volunteer firefighter for 33 and a third years in Mendota Heights. Do you think he'd allow me to do anything that would jeopardize the life of the children in a fire aspect? I consulted him. I consulted John Motzko, the fire chief from Mendota Heights, and both concurred that that was not considered a blockage of egress window. firefighters, as long as the window is the right size, they're going to come in with an axe if they know children are in there. Pack of toilet paper is not going to make a big difference. I appealed all of my violations, and I lost on every count. That process took 6 months. What kind of process that was, I have no idea, because I wrote my notes. I never heard from another soul. Warren Chafee, the Dakota County boss of licensing, never contacted me. No representative from DHS. No one came out to inspect my situation when I described my gated front porch and those items. I had no representation from DHS. I felt that I had nothing. It sat on somebody's desk for 6 months, and then I got my violation and my $400 fine. And my reputation could have been and may still be damaged for the rest of my life. God forbid if I should ever have a SIDS death in my care, because if I do, I will be one of those providers on front page news that has 9 to 11 violations in black and white that makes me look like the worst provider in the year of the year, when I have had 7 different licensors who had never found a violation in 18 years or until 2013. Since then, I've had 6 unlicensed visits, pop-in visits, and again, no violations have ever been found. I corrected everything that they found wrong with me within 24 hours, even though it took them a week to get back to me and check things out. The licensor who came to me was training in a new employee. That licensor has since left Dakota County, even though she had been a Dakota County licensor for many years. And the licensor that was being trained in from her soon after left the department. And partly I feel that it might have been because she saw just how unfairly I had been treated. She's now back in the licensing department, and I pray that she's learned that sometimes good intentions, when no child is hurt, is you're still a good provider. There are so many other things. The baby monitor situation. Another provider who now works for Parent Aware is, you know, admitted to me that she also, on front page of her contract, had the baby monitor situation, that she goes outside with her preschoolers. And this was, you know, somebody who's now represents Parent Aware. She also had no idea that they were interpreting that law differently. As far as getting licensed providers I've had many providers tell me it's taking 3 to 5 months to get their license process through. I'm grateful that I started in a time that we could work legally unlicensed, or I would not be a child care provider today, because I gave up a lucrative income and I needed to have some income as I was working through the process of being licensed. If I had not been able to work legally unlicensed in 1998, then I wouldn't be able to do that today.
Thank you, Ms. Coonan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anybody from members have any questions for Ms. Coonan? Thank you. And if you want to email the rest of your testimony, Ms. Coonan, feel free to do that, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you for your time and your very heart-wrenching testimony.
I just would like to say one quick more thing. Gratefully, all 100% of my clients that were with me on that day, including the 5-month-old's parents, stayed with me, wrote notices in my appeal to how they backed me up, and I have enrolled 8 other families since then, and it has not affected my business, because I am a very good provider, even though the paperwork record makes it look like I'm not.
And I can tell the passion in your voice, too. Thank you. Next up, we have Ms. Heidi Hagel-Brandt. Ms. Brand, if you want to state your name for the record. And
Good evening. My name is Heidi Hagelbraid.
And are you a provider or?
I am the regional director at First Children's Finance.
Okay.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide input and information to the Select Committee on Affordable Child Care. My name is Heidi Hagelbraid, as I stated earlier, and I work for First Children's Finance. The organization I work for is a national nonprofit headquartered here in Minnesota. First Children's Finance helps children, families, and communities thrive by increasing the availability, affordability, and quality of early care and education, including child care. First Children's Finance works on the business side of child care, ensuring that child care businesses remain stable and sustainable. In October 2013, we established a rural child care initiative called the Greater Than a Man Project. The Greater Than a Man Project provides rural communities an opportunity to address child care shortages through a framework that links child care to local economic development. Child care businesses play three distinct and critical roles in the greater Minnesota economy. Child care is its own economic sector with employees, facilities, and links to other industries. Child care providers provide services that enable parents to work and to be productive at work. And finally, they're an informal part of the educational system that supports the development of children, the next generation of workers. Child care is an economic multiplier. For every $1 spent on child care, it generates other business activity. And a sustainable supply of high-quality child care is a vital part of rural economic development. Inside of the Greater Than a Man Project, we have three distinct activities. First, a community planning process that results in action plans for communities to be able to identify their unique and specific needs regarding child care. We then engage members from the private sector and community leaders in a local child care task force that implement the plan. And finally, but they often happen concurrently, we offer child care business leadership cohorts for both child care centers and family child care providers to stabilize their child care businesses and plan for optimization or expansion opportunities. A large part of my work is spent partnering with rural communities to address child care shortages. Their plans are innovative and have the potential to create nimble and right-sized solutions for child care. However, in many cases, the solutions require a level of investment to incentivize community stakeholders to move forward. The provision of grants for communities would result in making their action plans truly actionable, changing the landscape of child care in Greater Minnesota. The bill that you are proposing is exactly on target with what Greater Minnesota communities need. The Minnesota Initiative Foundations may also offer a complementary bill that they looked at last session, and I think it is a good complement to that bill as well. All of these ideas are on the right track because they are designed to address the needs of rural communities. I wish to congratulate you on identifying an emerging trend in rural communities and encourage you to consider creating the opportunity that would add to the vibrancy of Greater Minnesota. Again, thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you, and if I can be of assistance, please feel free to connect with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heidi. Does anybody on the member on the committee have any questions? No? Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Mr. Jim Ross. Jim? And thank you for driving down here.
My pleasure. Thank you. To the Chair, Representative Franson, and Select Committee on Affordable Child Care, thanks for giving us the opportunity to have the open hearing to talk through and to support some of the new initiatives that we are hearing coming out of the Capitol. In terms of our needs, what we're looking for, I represent Clearwater County and Team Industries, manufacturing company, Boys and Girls Club, hopefully of Bagley, Minnesota, and Clearwater County, and also the Team Foundation. And I just wanted to share with the committee the importance of this move. we are looking at specifically in the areas of legislative task force and child care, the support for the creation of the additional information as it relates to child care business development appropriation. We support it wholeheartedly. We find that in the third poorest county of Minnesota, Clearwater County, any access to startup assessment, ongoing support would be reasonable and something that we see as important in our stakeholders of Clearwater County. The lack of child care in our region affects our shared constituent group together. It severely limits the access to economic opportunities in Clearwater County. Our rural population lacks access to jobs because of this. The region is well positioned to employ folks in the county, but with limited and diminishing child care, lack of affordable child care alternatives, lack of safe after school access, and no place to drop kids or to be accountable, no club access, no opportunities for safe harbor, homework support, anything we can do in the region would be most appreciative. In addition, we find in Clearwater County there are a number of economic issues at stake. We have, from this committee and their meeting in roundtables throughout the state, Clearwater County clearly is down in terms of child care providers by nearly 25%, and no active child care center itself exists in Clearwater County anymore. We used to have one. In addition to that, there are some peculiar population statistics in Clearwater County that should make notice. There are some 1,200 children under the age of 14. In the local school, we have 441 children under the five or younger. We have 332 school-age children 5 to 9 that could make use of support. As I said earlier, no center exists. No safe haven exists. And also, principally as an issue in Clearwater County, is the fact that it leads the state in the activity area and percentage of single parents. We exceed the 25 to 31% marker in the deed information. As I said earlier, we rank 85th out of 87 counties as far as per capita income. And to really address the issue, we look at things like, what is the cost of child care? The average cost of child care in Clearwater County, although along among the lowest rates in the state, still represent almost 31% of per capita income for a single parent. The budget doesn't get any better from there. When we start talking living wage, we look at the required income to generate expense coverage of $37,525, which is typical expense of one adult and one child, needs the income match of $44,000, or almost $22 an hour. In that county, per capita, we're at about half. So we're about $21,000 to $22,000 per capita in income, with the needs of almost $43,000 for child. The family budget takes a hit. Housing averages almost $650 a month per rental. It's not cheap. There isn't adequate housing. There isn't enough housing, as we knew in rural Minnesota. So with that, I ask that the Select Committee continue its fine work in the areas that we talked through, that we understand that you're exploring. We support that, and we wholeheartedly hope that we can extend some benefits to Clearwater County through your activities in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Does anybody on the committee have any questions they like to ask Mr. Ross? No? All right. Thank you for driving on down here and giving your testimony. Appreciate it. Is there anyone who did not get on the list who wishes to testify? I see you have packets if you want to give it to the page to
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Joel Carlson, and I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. And I'm here in front of you today on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And our association, which I've represented for not quite 25 years now at the Capitol, is a professional association of attorneys that represent people who are sometimes injured through the wrongful or negligent acts of others. And I appreciate the work that you're doing tonight, Madam Chair, and you know, we're very sensitive to the issue of affordability, and I applaud all of the daycare operators are here to support their profession and make it better. But we also care about safety and about accountability. And I want to just briefly put an issue in front of the committee that I think you may have heard about in Brainerd when you held your first hearing. And it is our feeling that there is an unintended consequence from a law change that you made in 2013 relative to insurance for child care providers that I'd like you to be aware of. I'm not asking you to do anything about it tonight, but I want you to know about it because it's a problem. The Star Tribune did an investigative story about child care operations, and they found in 2012 that children were dying in family daycare and child care facilities in Minnesota, almost one per month. And in response to that, the legislature made a number of changes in 2013, and I think that most people would say, just based on results, that things were beneficial. They've made many good changes. There were four child care deaths in 2015, and I'm only aware of one now in 2016. So we think the trend is good, but what happened in 2013 is while you encouraged in 245A 152, you encouraged child care operators to have liability insurance, you added a provision in that sentence that said if they don't have liability insurance, they need to notify the parents. And we're aware of instances, and I presented an intake form that happened to come from a family who lost their child in a family child care facility. I show you the intake form just because you see what the box is that they now have to check because of that statute. And in this instance, and I hope not many others, they canceled their insurance, which they had held for over 10 years, because of this change in statute, because they no longer had to have it by simply checking a box on this form prepared by DHS. And while that is certainly the law, I think that that is an unintended consequence of what was passed in 2013, and I'd like us to think about that. The last thing that I gave the committee, and I, as I said in the onset, we are concerned about affordability because child care is such an important aspect of our daily lives. But when you look at the insurance quotes that I've provided to the committee for obtaining $1 million policies, $100,000 policies, you can see that there is readily achievable and obtainable insurance coverage for child care facilities, including our own insurer of last resort, the Joint Underwriting Authority, which is available to anyone in Minnesota who cannot obtain insurance through any other form. The JUA offers an insurance policy for $100,000 per occurrence, $100,000 per individual, $300,000 per occurrence for a $200 annual premium. And I would submit to you, and what I'd like you to think about as you move this bill forward, I want to mention one thing specifically about the bill, but that cost, when there is an injury or when there is a death, does not seem to be outlandish and I think affordable, because I really think we're leaving some people who are utilizing child care in a very precarious situation, because they need the care, but they don't explain to them what not having liability insurance means. What they said in this instance with Lucas Cole is that if he gets injured on the playset in the backyard, you'd have to use your health care. And they said, absolutely. We have health care, that's okay. But they didn't say, if we cause an injury to your child that results in a serious injury or death, we have no coverage at all. That is not how this issue is explained to parents. And I don't believe that that is the policy that this legislature is in favor of. So on the bill, Madam Chair and members, as you move this issue through, you need to know, or I'd like you to know, and be mindful of, that as you are putting more responsibility on county licensing facilities, you are actually increasing liability for the county. And I'm not saying that that is a bad thing, but there is one area in statute, in Chapter 466, where local units of government do have liability when they know of a condition that can cause injury, and that is on daycare licensing. I'm trying to use child care. I'm working on my vernacular, but the statute says daycare. If they know of a dangerous condition, which I believe these notices would rise to that level, by doing the Section 2 of this bill, you're actually creating a liability system for county licensing agents, because I would argue or submit to you that they are going to know of a condition that could cause an injury, and they're going to give them that detailed report right at the time they do the inspection. So I want you to be aware of that statute, 466.03, subdivision 6E, because it's the only area in law where there is liability of the counties for their licensing decisions. So that section is going to implicate Chapter 466 on many more occasions, or potentially more occasions. We hope these instances are very limited and narrow. But when they are, and when it happens to your family or your neighbor or your child, you're going to want to make sure the legislature did what they could to protect those families, and I think we are inadequately doing that today. So that is not anything to say about the great quality child care we have in Minnesota, but there are gaps, and this is one of them. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Do any committee members have any questions? No? Okay.
Thank you.
Seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify that did not get on the list? Anyone?
You.
Yes? Okay.
Good evening. My name is Karen DeVos, and we met in Crookston. I'm an owner of a child care center, the only child care center in Norman County, which is Ada. We're kind of in the middle of nowhere, and people pretty much only know us for basketball. So I'm coming to you tonight. I did not plan to speak. I drove about 4 hours to be here. I just really want to urge you, as you're looking at this task force, please do not forget about rural Minnesota. We need support. We need help when it comes to CCAP. We need help when it comes to pathway scholarships. Our families need your help. Please don't forget about us. It is so difficult for us to be here when we have such limited notice to really kind of drop everything and try to get here. I'm so glad to be here. I can't wait to see you a whole lot more. But make sure that you're remembering those really small communities, because they need you as much as the areas up here do. So that's all. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thanks, Ms. DeVos, and yep. I certainly did appreciate touring your facility. And so thank you for making the drive down here.
Yep, thank
appreciate
you.
It. Representative Crescia, looks like you got some work to do, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I do. The scholarships. All right. Anyone else? Okay. Well then, members, I'd like to thank you for all being tonight, and for those in the audience that came and testified. Some of you from many hours to getting on the road to come here tonight. Certainly is a very important issue, and we look forward to continuing the discussion. And this was just an informational only hearing, and with that, we are going to adjourn the meeting.